You're listening to CICK News Election Coverage 2025. This program is part of the Alt Election 2025 National Election Project, coordinated by the NCRA-ANREC. This initiative is supported by the Covering Canada Elections 2025 Fund in partnership with the Public Policy Forum, Reedy Hall Foundation, and the Michener Awards Foundation. The content reflects local perspectives and does not imply endorsement of any political party. Log on to altelection.ca, that's altelxn.ca, for more national coverage. I'm Daniel Messick with CICK News and 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. Look us up at smithersradio.com. Here in Northwest BC, the region by size is larger than Poland, and politically speaking, it's known as the riding of Skeena-Bulkley Valley. There are around 67,000 eligible voters in the region, and the best turnout was a decade ago in 2015, when more than 69% of voters cast their ballots. The NDP won and have held this riding for more than 20 years. The incumbent, Taylor Bacharach, is a former mayor of Smithers, a major economic hub in Northwest BC, but with only about 5,500 people. Bacharach is seeking his third term as the region's member of parliament, originally elected in 2019 after longtime MP Nathan Cullen bowed out for provincial politics. Then Bacharach was elected in 2021 with more than 42% of the vote. Other candidates in the region include the Liberals' Inderpal Dhillon, currently a councillor in the city of Terrace, who could split the left vote along with the Green Party's Adina Young from Haida Gwaii. On the right side of the political spectrum, the Christian Heritage Party's national leader Rod Taylor will be looking for his usual 3% of the vote. And for the Conservatives, a blue wave has been forming as of late. Ellis Ross is the Conservative challenger and is poised to win Skeena-Bulkley Valley. The former Haisla Nation chief councillor is credited with leading the Haisla to being part of the largest industrial project in Canada in years, with the LNG Canada project in Kitimat, BC. He's also a former opposition member for the BC Liberals in Victoria for the provincial riding of Skeena and has been gaining popularity for years. After 20 years in NDP hands, Ross is proving to be the toughest competition for the NDP in Northwest BC, which will have Bacharach fighting for every last vote on April 28th. During the campaign, CICK News had a chance to speak with all the candidates running in Skeena-Bulkley Valley to hear why voters should elect them as their next Member of Parliament. Stay with us. Ellis Ross is the Conservative candidate for the riding of Skeena-Bulkley Valley and is making his way across the region to meet with voters and pitch his message. According to the polling aggregator 338 Canada, Ellis Ross has a 97% chance of winning the riding, which could upend 20 years of NDP control of Skeena-Bulkley Valley. Before his campaign stop in Smithers, CICK News and the Tyee's Amanda Follett-Hosgood had a chance to speak with Ellis Ross outside the Smithers Legion.
How's it been going so far?
Good. We're getting good responses here in Telqua and Smithers and Houston and Burns Lake. Yeah, but it's a massive riding. We're trying to get to everybody. Yeah. So it's going to be a struggle getting out to every place.
Yeah. What are you hearing from people? What do you think the big issues are?
Places like here in Smithers, they're worried about the crime. I mean, especially the other day, I just got word that a challenged person got home invaded and beaten up and had to crawl for help.
In Smithers?
Yeah, in Smithers. And everywhere I go, even the smaller communities like Telqua, they're worried about the crime. And I came from Terrace, and I brought the Terrace Council down to Victoria to try help the British Columbia government to realize you got to come help these towns that are trying to struggle with a crime, which they did.
Are you hearing about tariffs?
What's that?
Are you hearing about tariffs?
Oh yeah, everybody's hearing about tariffs.
What are your thoughts on addressing that?
It's something that the United States is doing to bolster their own economy. And I agree with something that Poilievre said a few years ago, we're too dependent on the United States. I think people realize that for a long time. So I agree with Poilievre, we've got to diversify our trade with other countries. But first we've got to apologize to them because we sent Germany away with saying we don't have LNG for you. We sent Italy away saying, we don't have LNG for you. I mean, our government said there's no business case for LNG. But now Alaska is going to sign a $40 billion LNG agreement with Japan. And so without a doubt, there's a business case. In fact, we got LNG started first in Kitimat, but the United States started later, and they became the largest LNG exporter in the world. It's just that our economy has been stifled and ignored for too long, and now we're finding ourselves in a weaker position.
We have the third largest port in Canada in Prince Rupert.
Yeah.
How do you think, in this context, how do you think we here in the Northwest can position ourselves in this trade war, tariff war, with a place like Prince Rupert?
They are key. I went to tour it there. I've seen all the land they cleared out, and they lowered the grade like 20 feet. And they're talking about exports, imports. And they've actually got the rail actually built into it around their site. It's massive what they're doing. I think that Prince Rupert is key, especially when you consider Vancouver Port is backed up. All the West Coast ports are backed up. The only question I have is, okay, we have an undeveloped port in Stewart. I think that could be key for mineral exports, as well as we have a private port in Kitimat, but that's already basically earmarked for LNG and high as a cedar LNG. But we have, I've been talking about economics for 15 years. I've been talking about international trade for 15 years. Nobody wanted to listen. Now everybody's concerned about the economy that's been stifled for 9 years and how do we fix it. It's a great conversation to be part of finally. And this is what I'm going around telling communities, especially ones suffering, like Houston. I mean, it's time to reinvest and think big and bring back our economies for the sake of our societies and our people who are suffering.
One thing you brought up the other day, April 1st, we're going to see a tanker of LNG come up the channel to kind of prime the system there at LNG Canada.
So yeah.
LNG Canada is getting ready to ship out their first shipment of LNG before the end of this year.
That's right.
So that's happening. Where do you sit with the Tsai Lism's LNG port that is proposed and kind of going through the motions right now? And on the same note, with this type of issue with tariffs and diversifying economies, would you support a repeal of the tanker ban?
The tanker ban won't affect them because that was mainly set for oil tankers.
Yeah.
But Tsai Lism's LNG is in the same boat that we were in, Haisla, back in 2004. I mean, this is what people don't realize. It was the Haisla people and First Nations from Prince George to Kitimat that actually pushed LNG exports on the provincial government and federal government. I mean, it wasn't the provincial government's idea. It wasn't the federal government's idea. In fact, we had to convince them this was the way to go. And so Nisga is in the same boat right now, and I fully support them, not only in terms of what it's going to do to get their people a better lifestyle and a better future, but also how it's going to benefit Canada and BC. And the tremendous amount of work and opportunity that we provided in Kitimat for all the communities across BC, I think that's what LNG for Nisga is actually proposing, the same thing.
I know you were chief counselor of the Haisla back in the days of the Northern Gateway debate. Subsequently happened was that tanker ban C-48. It doesn't cover LNG, so LNG is on its way. But would you support repealing that tanker ban to open the door for oil export out of the North Coast?
Well, I thought about that in the context of what was happening at the time. And when they came up with that tanker ban, the two First Nations that opposed it was Lac aux Lambs and Nisga, because they felt they hadn't been consulted and accommodated. Mm-hmm. And this is what I find with these types of governments. When they talk about this stuff, they don't really pay attention to the First Nations that really want economic development to resolve poverty or unemployment. They just go with, what seems right for Ottawa or Victoria, for that matter. And that's what I've been trying to change. I've been trying to tell different levels of government and politicians, First Nations are actually mandated to have a seat at the table because of the Haida court case of 2004. And what I find is, more often than not, governments ignore that. And that's what I try to fix. I try to educate politicians, governments, to kind of stick to what government's supposed to be doing on behalf of all of us as Canadians.
I mean, on the same note, there was a lot of support from First Nations and others around the tanker ban. What would you say to that?
There was, but when you go back to the Haida court case of 2004, I mean, I know it's a kind of a tough question, but there is a clause in the Haida court case that says you have to look at the economic component of rights and title. You have to look at it. And when they came up with that tanker ban, they didn't consider the treaty rights of Nisga, and they didn't consider the Aboriginal rights and title of Lac-O-Lams. They didn't consider it. And First Nation leaders, the ones I've met over the last 15 years, they're all trying to do one thing. They're trying to lift their people out of poverty. And for politicians and governments to ignore that is actually ignoring what has been referred to as Canada's shame. I mean, hopefully we resolve that in Kitimat, and hopefully we resolve that as a first step for pipeline communities along the route from Prince George to Kitimat. But, you know, most of the Aboriginals that I met, they're doing it for their people for a better future. Kids, grandkids, seven generations down the line.
That was Conservative candidate for Skeenabugly Valley, Ellis Ross, taking questions from journalists outside a campaign stop in Smithers, BC. During the campaign, five community all-candidate debates were scheduled throughout the riding in Burns Lake and Houston in the east, and Terrace, Kitimat, and Prince Rupert in the west. Early on, Ross said he wouldn't be attending any of the debates except the one in Kitimat, but after being confronted by a group of locals following his no-show at the Terrace debate, he committed to attending the remaining debates. Still, voters only saw three out of five candidates debate. The Green Party candidate Adina Young lives on Haida Gwaii, which is a hard place to travel from. However, the Liberal candidate, who lives in Terrace, didn't show up at any debate. I questioned Liberal candidate Inderpal Dhillon about why he was a no-show. We obviously have a very large riding here, and all the candidates, you know, have a challenge of getting out there, door knocking, long hours on the road, trying to meet people, you know, where they at. The riding is, you know, the size of Poland. You know, one riding in Canada, one of the largest ridings in Canada, the size of Poland. So a lot of distance to go, but we also have debates, and we have debates in all the major towns, in Terrace and Kitimat and Prince Rupert. There's one this evening in Houston, another one in Burns Lake, but it seems that you haven't shown up to the debates yet. Why is that? And are you planning to attend these debates so that people can see you and test you against the other candidates?
Actually, you know, because I got my tickets, like last minute. So, as you already said, that this is very vast like riding. So, I will make sure that I will see each and every individual. You know, like in this riding, it's almost 37,000 houses. So, I will try to make sure that I will meet everyone from one end to another, so that I can give a message of our PM and future PM Mark Carney to each and every individual that he has very good plans for our Skeenabulkly Valley. So that's why, you know, actually I didn't go on the debates because, you know, I'm just trying to manage as much I can meet the people from one end to another end. You know, I was in Burns Lake for 2-3 days. I was in Stewart. So after talking with you, I'm just going again on the road. I just start 5:30 in the morning. I just meet people again. So because your like interview was like for 5-10 minutes, so that's why I just schedule you in. So that's why.
No, I understand it, but you know, having a debate and the Conservative candidate, you know, was having trouble, you know, committing to the debates as well, but now it sounds like he has, and using the same, you know, the same idea. Oh, I'm out meeting people. Well, all the candidates are out meeting people, but going to a debate is a chance to basically, you know, see you against the other candidates. Being out at individuals, you know, and chatting with them, you know, that's fine and all, but when you're at a debate and you're being challenged by the other candidates and by the people in that room. As well, last night we had the Kitimat debate. You know, this is being broadcast on social media, so lots, hundreds, possibly thousands of people are seeing this. Why would you decide not to attend at least one debate so that you could show people in a public forum why you're a better candidate than the rest?
Actually, you know, because I have to be on road because to covering, you know, as you already told that this is very vast riding. So I'm just meeting people like one-on-one. So that's why I didn't get the time to go on the debate, because my schedule is like this. It's not fit in my schedule. I would I have preferred a format of a meet and greet, you know, like people like one-to-one. You know, actually, it's just like you are saying this, but, you know, like a lot of people, they're saying, yes, yeah, you know, you are good. You are like meeting people like one-on-one. That is like much better, you know, because in five minutes, I just met like 2-3 people right away. Just go on. Yeah.
That was Liberal candidate for Skeena-Buckley Valley, Inderpal Dhillon, speaking to why he decided to bow out of the all-candidates debates. NDP incumbent Taylor Bacharach has represented the riding of Skeena-Buckley Valley since 2019, and although he has held solid support since then, this election may prove otherwise. Conservative support in the region has been growing for years and now seems to be coming to a head. The polling website 338 Canada projects that the Liberals and the NDP will split the vote here in Skeena-Buckley Valley. Never mind the national polls, which are projecting an almost total collapse of the NDP, which could lose official party status, which requires 12 seats or more in the House of Commons, a concerning forecast to say the least. Skeena-Buckley Valley NDP incumbent Taylor Bacharach.
Well, I think there's a number of things going on in the country right now. You know, I'd be lying if I said that it didn't concern me to see those polling numbers. But at the same time, you know, the pundits and the pollsters have counted the NDP out and written our obituary more times than I can count. And we often outperform the projections that they put forward. So, you know, example of that would be the recent Ontario election. You know, that the pollsters were saying that the Ontario NDP was going to lose all its seats. And in the end, they ended up hanging on to all their incumbent seats. So the only poll that really matters is on election day, right? And when I talk to people on the ground, I think our message of standing up for the things that matter to Canadians, pushing back against conservative cuts, that's really resonating with people. And here in the Northwest, you know, this is a unique corner of the world. And the things that people care about here, in some ways, there are some things that are unique from the rest of Canada. You know, here we fought really hard for over a decade to bring in an oil tanker moratorium on the North Coast. The Conservatives want to scrap that. We worked really hard here to protect our rivers and our wild salmon from the threats of fish farms. And the Conservatives are pro-fish farms. The candidate I'm running against wants to bring in fish farms. So these are things that I think people understand are really significant differences. And they see that the vision we're putting forward and the fact that when we have the NDP in Parliament, no matter how many MPs, they get people that work tremendously hard, they get people who hold the government to account, and they get people that are able to conduct politics with the kind of respect and dignity that I think Canadians expect. And so that's what I'm going to try to bring to it. I'm working my butt off out here. You know that I've worked my butt off for the past 6 years. And that's not going to change if I'm elected on the 28th.
Yeah, definitely looks like you're covering lots of ground. We just got a few more minutes, but one thing I want to bring up that seemed to be an acute issue this election, which is a bit of an anomaly, but it definitely caught a lot of people's eyes, were these debates. You know, we have one of the largest ridings in the country, a lot of territory to cover, and a number of major cities and towns along the way. Many of them had these debates, but at the beginning of this, it looked like you and maybe one other candidate were going to be the only ones out of five to join these debates. It looked like you and Rod Taylor were the only ones at the terrorist debate, and some of that has shifted. As you mentioned, you have one more debate in Prince Rupert. You know, how does it make you feel to not have everyone at the table that you're running against at these debates?
Well, I think it's a bit of a troubling trend across Canada. You know, the stories of conservatives in particular not showing up for debates. You know, I'm hearing this from ridings all across British Columbia and across the country. You know, in some ways, election campaigns are like job interviews, right? the employer is the voter. The employer are the citizens. And the basic expectation is that you show up for the interview if you want the job. And so, you know, Terrace, which is one of the biggest communities in the riding, it's certainly an important community. And to have voters there not be able to see the candidates in person, interacting with each other and with the questions put before them, you know, I think that's it speaks volumes. And so I was glad that the debate went ahead in Terrace with my opponent, Rod Taylor, who, although we share a name, has really different ideas than I do, let me tell you. But the reality is that the voters deserve to see that contrast and to see how the candidates present themselves in front of the public. And so, you know, looking more broadly and beyond this election campaign, I think people are really concerned about the direction things are heading. There's more of this kind of command and control style, less accountability, less transparency, and it's getting harder and harder to have those genuine interactions with the candidates as they kind of hide behind scripted message box and campaign strategies. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I long for the old days when politics was done a bit differently. And people just showed up and brought their genuine selves and put it before the voters with respect. I think, we could really stand to gain from that. And right now, everyone spends too much time on their phones, right? Too much time on devices, too much time on social media. And when you get in a room with people and you look your neighbors in the eye, I think that just strengthens our democratic process, strengthens our communities.
Yeah, no doubt. Just the last thing for you, Taylor. You know, obviously, there's been a lot of criticism of the Liberals and the NDP over, you know, housing, inflation, affordability over the last number of years. But now that we're headed into the last few days and outlined some of the things that you mentioned there, what's the major message that you're trying to get across to people in these last few days that you're hoping to get every last vote that you can?
Well, my message is that there's a lot on the line. And I think people understand that in their bones, right? A lot of what we've worked together for in this region hangs in the balance. And so it's about having a politic going forward that really stands up for communities, stands up for people, stands up for our wild salmon and our coast and our watersheds, and creates opportunities for people. And we lived through 10 years of Stephen Harper. People still remember that. I don't think people want to go back to an era of deep cuts to public services, to the kind of division and dismissal that so many felt under the Harper regime, which the current leader of the Conservatives was a big part of. And so I'm hearing from people that they understand it, that they get it. And I think we're going to see really good turnout on election day. We already saw record turnout in the advance voting. And I'm just going to keep showing up for people and working hard and being open and transparent and listening carefully to what they have to say. I think that's what people expect, and that's certainly what they deserve.
That was NDP incumbent for Skeena-Bulkley Valley, Taylor Bacharach. As the campaign winds down, I had a chance to catch up with two of my colleagues in the region, Black Press's Jake Ray and the Taiyi's Amanda Follett-Hosgood, about what they have been covering over the past few weeks and what their predictions are for Election Day on April 28th. Amanda, what's kind of your take and what have you been hearing from people? Because when you look around, you know, a lot of people have been telling me, oh, I see lots of conservative signs. Oh, I see lots of NDP signs. You know, so, you know, how do you kind of put this all together and what do you kind of base your insight on what might happen on Monday?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll agree with Taylor on a couple of points. And one thing he said is how unique our region is. And I think that's true for all the reasons we've been talking about. And that the only poll that really matters is on election day.
Very true.
So, I mean, I don't know. I've exhausted myself thinking over what the outcome could be. I'll be really curious to see what does come Monday night. And maybe just a little PSA to all our listeners to get out and vote.
Yes.
I
believe, when did the polls reopen? Is it not until Monday, or are they open over the weekend?
I believe Monday. We're past advanced voting, okay. Which we saw Elections Canada said that they have seen a record-breaking number of people come out and vote. The last time I checked, it was over 7 million, which is quite significant for advanced polling. We'll see what happens on Monday. There's been a lot of chatter about this being the most important election in a generation. We'll see if that brings folks out. Jake, your insight on those final words from incumbent Taylor Bacharach. What's your thoughts on what possibly could happen Monday night? And maybe I'll throw this out. If we do see a flip of candidate of MP here in the riding, how do you think that's going to look or change on the ground floor for some of the folks you've been speaking with?
Well, my feel on the potential outcome is going to be inherently biased by what I observed at those two forums. And, you know, those are people who are politically engaged and who want to come out and have those discussions,
yeah.
Which isn't necessarily representative of every voter in the riding.
Yeah.
But there are two anecdotes that I'd like to share from the Burns Lake Forum. The first was, and I should say, in both forums, there was much louder applause for Conservative candidate Ellis Ross and his points that he was making. Some applause for points that the Christian Heritage Party candidate Rod Taylor was making, and some applause for points that Taylor Bacharach, the NDP candidate, was making. Oh, Burns Lake, yeah. And so what I noticed in the group that was clapping loudly for the Conservative side was somebody leaned over to another and said of Taylor Bacharach, "I just can't stand his smug smirk." And it's this sense of frustration with the incumbent candidate was really, really present in both crowds. And another moment that happened at the Burns Lake Forum was when the incumbent NDP candidate Taylor Bacharach went to make his closing statement. The moderator of the forum reminded the audience to remain respectful. And somebody called out, "It's a two-way street." And Taylor Bacharach said, "Pardon me." And the person in the audience repeated what they said louder. And Taylor Bacharach said, "Have I been disrespectful tonight?" And then the moderator kind of cut off the exchange. But I think that people do feel disrespected by government, and that's not necessarily an indictment of Taylor Bacharach as a person, but he is the incumbent candidate. And I think that he stands like an uphill battle because of that, because things are so hard right now in Canada.
Yeah, that reminds me of after the provincial election in the fall when Nathan Cullen lost his seat to the Conservatives. I interviewed a political expert who said it's a really bad decade to be an incumbent.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of sums it up. It's the issues are so much bigger than our riding and even our nation.
Mm.
And this is what candidates are having to tackle.
Yeah, all over the world. You know, we saw that in the U.S. Election and in Europe over the past number of months. You know, we've seen the same thing happening in Germany, France, Spain. You know, this is Slovenia. This is all incumbent governments are not well liked right now.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Time will tell how the next government and our next MP handles all the challenges.
Yeah. Final words from you, Jake.
Well, I would just like to chip in with one more point, which is that I think regardless, I think it's likely that either the NDP candidate or the Conservative candidate will win, but regardless of which of the two of them do, the riding, in my opinion, will be well served by a passionate local candidate who has strong ties to their community. So it's kind of a win-win in that scenario for this riding.
It's a great point. Yeah. And a little like glimmer of hope in a fairly bleak political landscape.
Yeah. Well, both of you, thank you so much for joining us here on Newsroom North for a special election edition. Of course, if you want to hear live coverage of what's going to happen on Monday night, tune in to CICK News. We will be doing live coverage once the polls close here around 7 o'clock. And we'll see about a half an hour after that. The numbers will start rolling in from across the country. And my insight, my feel is that we're going to have a very clear picture pretty quickly. Thank you both for joining me, and good luck on election night.
Thank you. It was an absolute pleasure.
All right, Amanda.
Good evening.
Take care. We'll see you out there. That was Black Press's Jake Ray, the Thais, Amanda Follett-Husgood, and myself, Daniel Messick, at CICK News, speaking about our federal election 2025 predictions for the riding of Skeena-Bulkley Valley. You've been listening to CICK News Election Coverage 2025. This program is part of the Alt Election 2025 National Election Project, coordinated by the NCRA-ANREC. This initiative is supported by the Covering Canada Elections 2025 Fund, in partnership with the Public Policy Forum, Redo Hall Foundation, and the Michener Awards Foundation. The content reflects local perspectives and does not imply endorsement of any political party. Log on to altelection.ca, that's altelxn.ca, for more national coverage. I'm Daniel Messick with CICK News and 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. Look us up at smithersradio.com. Thanks for listening.